The house is actually quite lovely when we moved in there. We lived there for 7 years. But yeah, it was over that time we saw about three owners take over. And one by one, they just all treated it like a cash cow and never put anything back into it and just let it go to rot. Hello, my name is Blake Hesketh, and I formerly lived at the worst rental in Australia.
Blake's a renter in Melbourne, and there isn't an official title or trophy for the worst rental property in Australia. It's actually a title that Blake was given by the Daily Mail after his house went viral. We'll get to that story later.
So we found out eventually the plumbing from my shower was not connected and was just like draining into the ground below and created quite like a nice little pond, I guess you could say, underneath the house.
Still, if there were an Olympics for atrocious rentals, Blake's previous home in Melbourne would be on the leaderboard.
Also, the showers leaking from the tiles and that, because none of the tiles and that had been maintained or fixed, so all the water was leaking in through the walls. The whole house was wet. Like, you know, like a gross sponge you don't want to touch in a kitchen? Just imagine that, but your whole carpet.
In other words, Blake was paying to live in a swamp.
It was like an op shop smell on steroids. It just became a giant joke in the end. Like, this is the state of housing these days.
In Australia, there's something I like to call a tenant's triangle. And that's partly based on my own experiences. But I think that nobody can have all three of these things. A good and responsive landlord, a safe and well-looked-after home, and affordable rent. Some people have one. If you're lucky, you'll have two. But it's next to impossible that you'll have the trifecta. Blake barely had one of those things. And even though he's just one guy, his story is emblematic of a generational shift. With home ownership out of reach, more of our generation has no choice but to rent, and for much longer than our parents ever did, maybe for the rest of our lives. That puts us at the mercy of landlords, and it's making some of us intensely angry. In this episode, we'll meet the people trying to make it better, the people who are mobilising, taking things into their own hands, and fighting back. I'm Ange McCormack. This is The Great Housing Disaster, a special series from 7am. This is episode 2, The Renter's Resistance. And just a heads up, this episode contains some coarse language. For 7 years, Blake did everything tenants are told to do when there's issues with a property.
We took notes down of everything, especially when the last owners took over. That's when we like, all right, maybe if we have new owners, we could possibly get a fresh start and start getting things like a heater installed and all these other bare minimums. So yeah, when they took over, we started taking notes and then we'll send in them. We need to get this updated. This is not good. Like, your plumbing's leaking and that.
At this point, Blake was getting frustrated. So he started documenting his home and posting it on his personal social media for kicks.
I just put it on my like close friends list. Just joke about it, then one by one everyone kept mentioning like purple fingers.
I had a similar experience to Blake, not living in a swamp, but after I mentioned that I was working on a series about housing, I was repeatedly told by friends to talk to Purple Pingers. Purple Pingers is a guy on the internet whose real name is Jordan Vandenberg.
Hello, welcome back to Shit Rentals with your host, Purple Pingers. Today we're in Penshurst for $540 a week. Today we're in Northcote for $850 per week. Hello, welcome back to the hellscape that we live in, and also...
His videos are super deadpan, stark, no-frills commentary on the state of the rental market in Australia. And they've made him into a kind of unlikely renter's rights champion from his studio apartment. The videos will often just be him and a domain listing of a horrible rental home in the background. And they'd be really funny if they weren't so depressing.
Welcome to Affordable Housing in Melbourne. This will be your bedroom. Doesn't come with curtain, but does come with cupboards and a light that makes it look like the whole room is covered in piss. Why?
And Jordan didn't set out to become a rental advocate. He's just a 28-year-old with a day job who decided to upload videos one day. I went to visit Jordan at his place to meet him and his three cats.
The cat is chewing.
He's like 16 years old and he's...
Is he?
Yeah, he doesn't have a single brain cell yet.
And I asked him about the purple pingers thing.
So in year 10, I got an Xbox and was making a gamer tag. And Purple Monkey Dishwasher was a big thing, but that name was taken. And also, pingers was quite a funny word, and that's how that happened.
And now it's stuck.
Yeah, and I regret it every day since then.
Do you? You could change.
After gaining a huge following, Jordan has gotten used to being hit up by strangers. Not only does he get thousands of DMs from tenants venting about their landlords or their homes, he'll actually go and visit some of the worst ones and record video tours through mouldy bedrooms and broken floorboards and sagging ceilings. And that's exactly how he met Blake. It was just another DM in his inbox.
I remember someone was like, hey, do you want to come visit our house? And usually what I do is I thought, well, then call the person. And I called this tenant and he was like, oh, yeah, like, do you want to come have a look? The house is pretty bad. And I was like, okay, I trust you. And then it was literally the worst thing I've ever seen in my life. So, yeah, I wasn't expecting that. Even remotely.
So these tenants have been living at the property for 7 years. The property is pretty fucked, you'll see shortly. They've asked for an...
God, it was so bad. There was like plants growing through, asbestos, like exposed asbestos in the kitchen, just like the splash pack was just asbestos. The house was like literally falling apart as they lived it, like a gas leak, all that kind of stuff. And then the landlord raised the rent. The gas inspector who came out to do the mandatory gas and electrical safety check was like, I'm glad this house has so many holes in it, otherwise you would all be dead.
The microphone's up here, so I don't know if you can hear the squidges, but it's pretty fucking great.
We didn't realise how bad it gotten on us until we saw people's reactions. We found pictures of the house on, like, Chinese social media pages, Indian social media pages, even, like, Indian newspaper sites and that. It spread really far, really quickly. Like, we noticed people were, like, just walking past taking photos of the house and that, being like, that's from the house from the internet.
After Jordan's video of Blake's house was going viral, the Herald Sun came round to take photos. The Daily Mail wrote a story titled, Is This Australia's Worst Rental? And A Current Affair came knocking.
The face of homelessness is changing. It's mums, dads and their kids, people with jobs who can pay rent, just can't find anywhere to live.
The camera crews documented the place and the reporter wrote some puns for their voiceover track.
Smoke detector, that's quite alarming. Walls, exactly what they're cracked up to be. And duckboard floor patches covering an indoor waterway. Tenants here recently had the rent upped from $1,600 a month to $1,800.
At the end of the day, there's no way...
When the story went to air on TV, Blake and his friends gathered round to watch it.
Kind of came on and... went from, like, celebrations and claps to, like, get them to, like, the end of the segment, everyone in the room being like, that's fucked. Everyone around me is, like, struggling to find rentals or get anywhere ahead of it or find a settling position. Like, a good 50% of us have given up on the idea of ever owning property. I've had a good, like, 10-plus friends in the last couple of years move out of town. So, yeah, I've lost a good couple of friends in this crisis in some shape or form.
Blake's story might be the most dramatic that Jordan, or Purple Pingers, the rental advocate, has ever dealt with, but with about a third of Australians now renting a home, it's just one of many.
Because everyone's had a bad experience with a landlord, no matter who you are in Australia.
Renters love Jordan's videos, but they quickly pissed off real estate agents and landlords, and Jordan started getting angry and threatening letters from them.
Usually what I say is feel free to send me a concerns notice, which is the first step to commencing defamation proceedings, and I've never received one yet.
Jordan isn't deterred. In fact, seeing so many awful and in some cases illegal rentals has inspired him to go bigger.
There was just so many kind of stories coming in, and I didn't have, one, the time to do it, and like, two, I wanted people to be able to tell their own stories without going through some white person on the internet. So that's when I started Shit Rentals.
Jordan's website, shitrentals.org, is basically like Google reviews for rental properties. You can submit a review of what your rental was actually like compared to the shiny real estate listing photos. And it's growing quickly. Their database now has reviews from every state and territory. What Jordan's doing with Shit Rentals is part of what you might think of as a renter's resistance. Forced into the rental market, unable to see a way out and feeling helpless, writing reviews is an exercise in clawing back a power imbalance that defines renting, where landlords get to know everything about you when applying for a property, but you have no idea what they'll be like if you live there. And Jordan's work in this space is kind of revelatory. It's caught the interest of some pretty high-powered people.
I did have an exchange the other day with Purple Pingers about this issue. I'm not sure how Hansard will record Purple Pingers, but he's an online personality.
That's the Victorian Labor MP for Preston, Nathan Lambert.
It is true that under the current laws, we are very concerned with renters' rights, and as such it's not possible to rent out a property that doesn't meet the minimum standards, but it is, strictly speaking, possible to advertise that property because of the point where you're advertising.
Nathan spoke in Victorian Parliament earlier this year in support of an amendment to a bill that would provide Victorian renters with more rights, but Jordan thinks they're not doing enough.
Government agencies generally are very keen to have a chat, and then government ministers are less so. The government agencies, though, that are doing the job, like regulating and providing policy recommendations and stuff, they're very keen to chat, so that's really... I welcome that, but it also shows that the government itself don't want to hear what renters are experiencing because they think they know what they're doing, and it's quite clear from the stuff that I'm doing that it's not working.
Despite governments being interested in what Jordan's doing, he says that most politicians can't really relate to how dire the problem is.
They are landlords. It's quite simple. Like, if you look at a judge deciding a case on something where they had a conflict of interest, they would have to recuse themselves from the decision. But we've got landlords in Parliament deciding legislation, writing legislation about things that impacts them and their home ownership, and they're the ones writing and passing the legislation. That's the reason that we're not going to see any change that positively helps renters, because they're not renters. So, yeah, until they do their job, I'm happy to keep doing this.
Blake, the tenant who lived in Australia's worst rental, was ultimately evicted. It was a long time coming, as the landlord admitted that they needed to clean up the place. Still, in this rental game, Blake was the loser, even though he'd done all of the right things. He'd contacted his local MP, who was keen to help him when she saw the viral video of his house. That went nowhere. He'd obviously bugged his property manager and landlord to fix the conditions he was living in. Again, nowhere. In the rental crisis, the official channels to support tenants are often dead ends.
So out of the people that you contacted and sort of reached out to, was Jordan kind of, was he the most useful person that you've reached out to in the end?
Yeah, definitely. It's very good to have an outlet like Jordan who can literally do a video like that and get all my internal screaming out in some way, shape or form. There's a reason why it hasn't changed, and it's been crooked for so long that, like, unfortunately, I think all these years of damage is just going to take just as amount of time to fix it up. And I think we're at near peak of this mess where it'll get pretty rough for the people out there in the next couple of years.
So Blake had finally left his rental home and all of its mould and asbestos behind. But what had happened to him in the swampy house and how he'd tried to resist it would actually go on to haunt him. That's coming up after the break.
For Sloane Crosley, writing about the loss of a friend may not have provided catharsis, but it did allow for the possibility of a better ending.
Like, you have this amazing meal that's this friendship, and then you have a really, 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 really bad dessert with shards of glass in it. And then, like, the book is like, you know, those little chunks of chocolate that come with the bill.
I'm Michael Williams. Join me for this week's episode of Read This as I talk to Sloane Crosley about her latest, Grief is for People. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
As a 7am listener, you know how important it is to stay informed even throughout the summer. In addition to this podcast, Schwartz Media is publishing several free newsletters over the summer. Sign up to receive The Food, a weekly email bringing you the latest recipes from the food editors of the Saturday paper, and The Arts, a weekly arts and culture newsletter with criticisms and provocations from the country's best arts writers, coming straight to your inbox once a week. Subscribe for free at thesaturdaypaper.com.au/newsletters.
Sydney is at risk of becoming a city without grandchildren. That's the dire warning from experts tonight as the housing crisis forces young families and workers to leave in droves.
If you're a renter, I don't need to tell you how competitive the market is right now. You'll know by the lines of hopeful tenants queuing at open homes on Saturday mornings. Of course, it's not just anecdotal evidence. Renters are living in a record-breaking time.
New data has revealed Australia's rental crisis is worsening across the country, with the number of listings almost halving over the past year.
Almost 500,000 families have now been forced onto rental assistance.
Demand is far outstripping supply, and that's causing rents to jump even higher.
Across Australia's capital cities, rents have increased a lot. They're up 17% over the past 12 months. And there's also a scarcity of properties. Only about 1% of rentals around the country are vacant. These conditions mean that landlords and real estate agents can be really selective about who gets to rent a property. You basically have to be a perfect tenant to have a chance against everyone else. For someone like Blake, who had been evicted and whose name was everywhere on the internet for being an unhappy tenant, he was no longer perfect in the eyes of some landlords. And while he was trying to find a new place, he ended up becoming homeless.
Yeah, we're homeless for 3 months there because all the knockbacks. And then in the end, I realised that due to the video, my name personally was pretty much on like nearly every second dartboard of a real estate agent's house.
Oh, so you think you were blacklisted?
We found out we were blacklisted. We always paid rent. The community loved us. We'd done nothing wrong. We'd like more than happy to pay more rent. And then out of nowhere, because I managed to ask for the bare minimum, now I'm blacklisted.
Blacklisting is another way that illustrates the power imbalance that exists between renters and landlords. It's a mechanism that can be used against renters, but renters can't do it against landlords unless they submit a review to the shit rental site we mentioned before. It's an issue that interests Dr. Sophia Malson, a senior lecturer at the School of Architecture, Design and Planning at the University of Sydney.
I research the private rental sector and the housing market.
Is there actually like a blacklist of tenants? Yeah. Is that a myth or is that
no, right? No, there's tenant databases with blacklisting of tenants. Tenants are put on that. For example, if they're evicted or whatever, the landlord can enter them. And then property managers and landlords can refer to this database. And if you're applying, refuse you on that, you know, you're on that database. There are things that you can do. You should be able to be given a reason as to why you've been put on that database, and you should be able to access it and challenge it. But a lot of people don't know this, and that has real impacts, right? Because it has a serious impact on you finding future housing.
As well as being an expert, Sophia teaches young people every day, and seeing the impact the rental crisis is having on them is just as shocking as what she finds in her research.
I ask my students, like, how many of you share house? Barely any of them, because they can't afford to. So they stay at home, they live with mum and dad. So that's one key area where you learn to be independent, you learn to negotiate sharing with other people who aren't your family and resolve conflicts and be less of a dick. I don't know, you know, like all of that kind of stuff happens in those spaces and they've been taken away.
And it's not just that young people are living with their parents for longer. Sophia says the rental crisis is upending the typical milestones of adult life, like starting a family. Many are delaying that choice and some can't afford to at all. And then there's evidence that those who do become parents are increasingly forced to raise children in share houses. That was heard last year at a parliamentary inquiry into housing stress.
I declare open this hearing of the Senate Community Affairs References Committee's inquiry into the worsening rental crisis in Australia.
One woman called Ada said she worked full-time in the public service. She'd lived in pretty stable share houses for years, but when she became pregnant, decided it was time to move into her own place. She spent 3 months attending inspections, but eventually had to give up.
And at that stage, I thought, you know, it's kind of unreasonable to plan to move when after 32 weeks pregnant or when you've got a newborn. It's not ideal. So
Ada ended up asking her housemate to move out and become temporarily homeless for 6 weeks while she settled her newborn baby in a house that was freezing. It cost her $13 a day just to heat it above 8 degrees.
So I hauled myself up in the room I'd converted into the nursery, the smallest room, the easiest to heat room. It's got bubble wrap on the windows. The vents are covered over with plastic. The doors are reinforced. And so that room I could heat up to a comfortable temperature. And the rest of the house I would heat to 10 to 12 degrees. The only time I've heated the whole house this entire winter is when I was in labour, when I thought, as a special treat, let's turn on the central heating, we'll go 20 degrees.
Stories like Ada's are becoming more and more common, and long-term insecure renting can have a real impact on people's health. One study from the University of Adelaide found evidence that renting was even worse for our health than smoking. And because of the rising cost of housing, Dr. Sophia Malson points out that more and more people have to rent.
We're also seeing, because it is such a competitive market, a trickle-down effect where people who once would have been buying homes are having to rent, so they're taking out the higher end of the renter market. They've got more disposable income, which pushes people who would have been, you know, able to afford a nice rental further down. And we find those people at the bottom end increasingly being displaced. So more likely to fall into homelessness, which includes living in cars, couch surfing, things like that. So it's having this cascading trickle-down effect across the whole spectrum of the rental market.
Sophia says Australian society is just not really set up to have so many people renting. We're a country that's been designed for homeowners.
To be a good citizen means you're also owning your own home. So if you're not, you've failed in some way. When you think about the way that even our retirement policy is organised, it's all based on the assumption that you own your own home by the time that you're retired. So that your house is an asset. If you want to go into a retirement village or you need care, you sell your home to pay for that. In other countries, renting is normalised, but the system itself is set up in a way that you have that security. Everybody knows clearly, you know, what the expectations, their obligations are as tenants and what's the obligations as landlords. And it's much more clear cut and you're not looked down upon for being a renter.
And now with so many people missing out on climbing the property ladder and still renting, their resistance is now becoming political.
Just one point I think is worth making on these numbers is the growing influence of the rental vote. Keep in mind that one third of Australians are renting. So the Greens polling basically neck and neck with the Coalition on primary vote when it comes to renters.
So my suggestion is to both of the major parties, they have to come up with serious policies for renters.
Now, a change in negative gearing is unpopular across the board, but I would imagine it's popular with young people who are fed up with ridiculous house prices and ridiculous rents.
But if anyone thinks that the rental issue is just something that really doesn't matter, it's a third potentially of the electorate.
Being a renter has never really been a sign of how someone votes, but now some people believe that renters could start voting together and actually sway the next election.
The power imbalance between landlords and tenants is obvious. There's a class of people who have direct control over the lives of another class. This landlord class is able to decide who deserves housing and who doesn't.
And I think what's become abundantly clear and what will become clear over the next few years is that we are not going to put up with that. Indeed, is anyone here going to put up with that?
No!
The investor is just a middleman taking a parasitic cut of profits and giving nothing back to society. So get them out of the system!
Homeowners still outnumber renters in Australia. Their voices and interests are still louder than tenants, for now. There's 7 million renters in Australia, and that group is growing in size and anger every day. And the crisis isn't going away for tenants. In fact, the Reserve Bank warned that even if interest rates drop, meaning landlords would be under less mortgage stress, conditions for renters are likely to get worse over the next 2 years before they get better. But until we see that political backlash gain proper momentum and the power balance tips in favour of renters, it's still up to individuals to agitate and improve their own conditions. Like Blake, who did eventually find a new home.
And is the new house, is it a swamp or...?
No, it's pretty decent.
Okay, good. I'm glad.
Yeah, no, it's the first time I've ever had a heater or air conditioning, so it's pretty nice. Thankfully, a lot of like private parties jumped out and decided to help us when that video came out.
But Blake's still angry about what he went through. So he started undertaking a different kind of renter's resistance by literally starting a fight against the owners of his old place and taking them to the Victorian Civil and Administrative Tribunal. He's asking for compensation for what he experienced in the house with exposed asbestos, swampy floors, and a near-lethal gas leak.
I'm more or less doing all this because after going to consumer affairs and that, like, single mothers that are juggling kids and that don't have time to, like, go to VCAT and do all these forms. And, like, there's a lot of people out there that are struggling and can't play this hoops and jumps game that set up clearly in the real estate's favour.
Blake knows there's a chance it might not lead anywhere. And even if he does win, he's not hopeful it'll be much compensation anyway. But he's doing it for the principle of it, to show landlords that tenants are fighting back. And if it goes nowhere or he loses, it'll kind of prove a point. In this housing crisis, some people just aren't being listened to. So, who does get a say? Who is being heard? That's on the next episode of The Great Housing Disaster.
As a 7am listener, you value the story behind the headlines. That's why you should read Post, a free daily newsletter bringing you the top 5 news stories of the day, summarising each of their key points with links to full articles from a range of sources. Get the news you need to your inbox every weekday morning with Post. Sign up at thesaturdaypaper.com.au/newsletters.